Ryan's not here to defend himself. Ryan was actually at Mar-a-Lago when the FBI raided.
What was he doing there, though?
I don't know, but he was already a person of interest. Like, they didn't take him into custody because of what was going on at Mar-a-Lago with all, like, the classified documents and stuff.
Yeah.
He was already a person of interest to the FBI, so he got taken into custody because they just happened to find him there, along with all those documents of, like, nuclear codes and shit that Trump just decided to hang on to for fun.
Is Busey taking this okay?
Busey's going to be fine.
Okay.
They have not let him visit yet, but they've let him call Busey. That was, like, the one phone call rule that's not actually a rule.
No.
Don't ever, like, if you learned one thing on our podcast tonight...
Yeah, the law. Let's teach you law.
Right. The one thing you need to learn... don't worry about anything we said about Xenoblade. Just remember, like, if you get arrested, you're not entitled to one phone call. You can have as many phone calls as you want. And, like, in TV shows, they say one phone call because it builds drama and also, like, is a little bit of a trap. Like, oh, you're going to call the most important person. You can call whoever you want. Don't let them only give you one.
Hey, John, I'm not going to be able to make it a pod tonight. I'm in jail.
Did I ever tell you... we're about to say something only an old person says.
Oh, God.
When I was working at Blockbuster.
Oh, God.
Right? People would call us, and on Tuesdays when new releases came out, they would call. And the only reason I remember that is because that's when new video games come out as well.
Yeah.
Sometimes they'll drop a new video game on a Friday, but most of the time Tuesdays.
Nowadays it's Friday.
Oh, has it shifted? Well, it's probably for the best.
I mean, it's always Fridays now.
That's probably for the best. There are sometimes we'll get, like, a Switch game, like Amazon will deliver on a Tuesday. But neither here nor there. What are we talking about? When I worked at Blockbuster, there was one time, like, somebody called, like, asked what the new movies for the week were. And I told him. And he was like, oh, okay, thanks. I'm going to have to I'll let my mom know. I'm actually I just got arrested. So I just needed to call. And you're in police. Guys, like, oh, yeah, I just needed to call real quick and find out what the movies were so I could tell my mom. You're calling me on the phone. Like, yeah, you know you only get one of those, right? Oh, shit. Which, of course, I gave him the wrong information. You get more than one phone call. Call every video store in your area if you want.
Find out what movies came out.
Yeah, so you can tell your mothers. Anyway, this is the mini show. We'll talk about whatever we get about, please. Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, a guy called me who had just been arrested because he wanted to know what the new releases were.
It's good to know that he's got his priorities straight.
I know, right? I mean, clearly he did it, whatever he was arrested for. He knew he was caught, so he just decided to call around.
Keep talking about how the shower is longer.
Yeah, we'll talk about whatever we feel like. We'll talk about mostly Xenoblade.
Yeah, this is pretty much the Xenoblade podcast.
Because we've been playing a lot of Xenoblade.
Yeah, we're going to stop doing the Poke Show, and it's just going to be the Xeno Show. And,
yeah, we'll see a lot less of Brian. but yeah, I'm about 45 hours into Xenoblade 3. I'm in Chapter 4.
We'll let you know in a moment.
You're checking your play clock now. So we're pretty much in the same place.
Yeah, I'm a little behind you.
In terms of, like, the story progression.
34 hours.
Okay.
So I've done less wandering around aimless. 37. Never mind. Apparently it's been 3 hours since I saved.
Slightly less wandering around aimlessly.
Yeah, slightly less.
Because I have done a lot of wandering around, like, trying to sneak around to enemies that are much higher level than me.
I mean, also, I play with the path indicator.
Okay.
I play with that. So when I'm like, I need to get this quest done, I can just go straight to the quest. You go a lot of fumbling around and be like, it's maybe over here. I mean, how long did it take you to figure out where that one class was?
It took me a while because that was a class. Well, let's
start. Talk about the game before we start about specifics.
Well, we can get into that. But, like, I think it's a good way to talk about the actual class system. So... Xenoblade 1, everyone was kind of locked into this is how you use this character. This one's DPS, this one's a healer, this one's a tank. Xenoblade Chronicles X functioned a lot in the same way, except there was a bit more fluidity to switching between. Like, you had, like, you could make whatever character, whichever class you wanted, but it was pretty much, like, two different types of tanks, two different types of DPS, and a couple types of healers.
Okay.
Xenoblade 2 was just, like, a fucking free-for-all. You still had your three classes, but it wasn't, like, your actual characters that were the class. It was the blades that were the class.
Which also, on top of that, it threw in more hecticness because you didn't know what blades you're going to pull because they went...
It was
full round.
It was randomized. So,
just randomized blades.
And for example, like Rex was better, like got leaned more into an attacker class kind of by default. Whereas Neo kind of leaned more into a healer role. But you might just come across like...
Was that her name?
Nia, yeah.
Nia. And, oh, okay.
But Tora was a tank.
Yes.
Tank class. But
by default, but... Yeah.
Right, right. And, you know, of course, there was, like, a Poppy who was a tank class and a Poppy who was an attacker class. Neither here nor there. It was a weird character.
Yep.
And that was the thing about Xenoblade 2 is everything was just, like, so scattered. It was, like, every idea. Every idea is in. Are we going to make it cohesive? No, they'll figure it out. And it was
great. Just take the dartboard off the wall that we were throwing at and just put it in there.
Yeah, just everything's in there.
Yeah.
And it was great. I love Xenoblade 2.
I love that one too. Oh, so good.
But like,
I will play it again at some point soon.
But the class system was much more randomized because you could like have your healer character and then pop three rare like our legendary cores in a row and get three tanks. And like, well, great. Now I have to go through the process of trying to get these reassigned. Which
my second run through, that's what happened to Rex. You end up pulling two tanks. I'm like, what the fuck am I gonna do with this?
Right. And then you have to either. You find the things kind of organically, like there might be a handful of them like throughout the game just randomly find that you can use to reassign those things. But then the only other way to acquire the item to reassign blades was to take a 4-star blade, one of the rando looking ones, a non-legendary one, and filling out its entire skill tree, and then it would give you the item to reassign something. Arduous.
That's a whole big ordeal.
Classes in Xenoblade 3... You know, you still have your three basic classes of attacker, healer, and tank. And your six characters who are all in your party kind of have, like, lean. Like, they definitely have, like, this is your starting class. And they have affinities with a class or class types. So Noah and Senna are going to be your attackers.
Yeah, the guy with the gall.
Yeah, the girl with the gall.
Girl with the gall, my bad.
Lance and Mio are your tanks, and then Tion and Yuni are your healers. And you can take them into any class you want, and sometimes they'll have high affinity with a different class, but generally you want to have a balance, and they're going to seem to have like the most affinity with those classes are sort of predisposed to. Mm-hmm. Noah and Senna are going to have the highest affinity with attacker classes, so on and so forth.
Yeah, but there's certain ones that still do fine.
Mm-hmm.
Like Yuni, I put her in a couple of attack rolls. I'm like, she's doing fine with this.
Yeah, yeah. Like just... And when you go through like your class list, you'll be able to see like a D through S ranking, S being the highest, of how sort of... What's the word I'm looking for? How compatible they are with that particular class.
Does it change per character? I thought that was just details on the class itself.
If you press a ZR, it will show you details of how they'll work with that character.
Oh, I did not know that one.
Yeah, and that will also affect of how quickly they level up in that class.
That makes a lot of sense, because I've noticed a couple of things. Like Noah, I made him whatever Tion's starting class was, mm-hmm. whatever that is. The tactician.
Yes, sir. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whatever the thing is. And he took four... ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost didn't finish it. I was like, screw it. But I think I burned coins on him.
That's the other thing. The game gives you so much tutorials. We talked about this in the official slide. They give you a tutorial on how to use an item shop.
Yes.
Guys, come on. But there are other things where the game, like useful things, like checking compatibility, like using Nopon coins to force upgrade or level up classes. They don't tell you that. You have to like actually pay attention to the button prompts at the bottom of the screen to know these things. And when I found out that you can use Nopon coins, I immediately texted like, holy shit, you can use these silver Nopon coins. That didn't really have any other discernible use that I had found so far. I think the Collectopedia. I just discovered today you can use those to fulfill Collectopedia requests.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a point early on in the game, like the first 20, 25 hours, where I just kept seeing them auto-sold because my inventory was full of Nopon coins. And I wish I'd known earlier they'd just burn them to upgrade classes, because I must have auto-sold a good 15 or 20 of them.
Yeah. And it's not much for a couple of levels. Like, it's pretty costly to, like, go from 0, 1 to 10. But, like, a couple levels here and there, that's not that bad. You just want to quickly
like get somebody
through
off.
A class so you can mm-hmm. do another layout.
Yeah, so if you, like, completely turn your party over, like, okay, everyone's upgraded class, let's put everyone in a new class so we can keep some party balance going. The ones who are leveling up more slowly, when, you know, like, if half your group gets to level 10 and everyone else is still kind of poking around level 7 or 8 coins, so that everyone's upgraded and just reclass everybody again. And that's how I've been sort of trying to handle everyone's classes, because, like in any like job-based RPG, when you master a job, there are certain abilities that you can carry over to another job. So it's to your advantage to master as many of these things as you can. And I think that's why we started talking about classes. Because in this game, rather than having like your blades be your job class and having to swap them around, you can just learn one, finish it, and then move on to the next one. Yep. You're not sort of like locked into whoever you have equipped.
So anybody can be any class at any point.
Right. Which is good. But yeah. The one you were talking about, the I think it was the Incursor, that I couldn't find because it was...
I was talking about the Strategos, because that was the one at...
inside the cave?
Inside the cave.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. The cave where when you initially go into it, you have to escape through the waterway.
Mm-hmm.
Which there's a pretty funny story moment that you'll get to in just in an hour or so, where they reference that. But you escape through the waterway, and then you get a hero quest, which is how you unlock more job classes. Where it's like, hey, go back in there. There was like a cave-in or something. You have to go in there and rescue the people from the cave-in. He's like, okay, cool. And I found the entrance to go in, and then I just totally missed a super obvious elevator. But like for a while, I was like just kind of poking around in there, being like, oh, okay, well here's some dead bodies that I can go and send off, send their souls to hell or whatever. And then, like, okay, here's some ether mines, and I found, like, a couple of things I could find and stuff. So it wasn't, like, a totally worthless trip, but...
You just passively gloss over, send their souls to hell or whatever.
I assume that's where they're going.
I mean, they are war criminals, I guess. I mean...
Uh-huh. And no one's brought the word of Jesus Christ to the land of wherever they are that we know of. Anyway...
Off to hell you go.
So I could see, like, the ledge I was supposed to get onto. I could even fucking see the elevator shaft. Like, how the fuck do I get to that elevator shaft? I just have to, like, backtrack 20 feet. But I was, like, elevator blind. Like, in Myst. So you just have to close the door. I totally missed the elevator the whole time.
We're referencing that.
I even tried to, like, jump. I even tried to, like, just dive down there so I could actually get past the story moment. It probably would have made the game freak out if I was able to pull it off, because... You know, you go down the elevator, you have to push the stone out of the way. And where I was trying to jump down to was on the
opposite side of the stone.
Yeah. So, like, the game probably would be like, whoa, how the fuck did you get back here? But, like,
trapped in there, because I wouldn't even...
Right. I mean, I would have been able to warp out, but, like, yeah. Everyone who was trapped in there would have been like, all right, have a good one. I guess I finished the quest. You're still stuck here.
Off the hell you go.
I had my tankiest character. I had, like, the equipment onto him to, like, buff up their HP as much as possible. And I would just, like, dive down there, like, trying to find the place with the shortest distance. But every time it was an instant death. And I would, like, have, like, 4,000 HP, and the jump wasn't that far. I was like, there's got to be a place where I can drop down here. Like, I should be living through this fall. But no, the game was killing me because...
You can't do that.
I wasn't supposed to be there. It wasn't letting me cheat. But yeah, I did eventually find it. And I like the way they handle questing in this game.
It's pretty interesting. It seems like there's less quests in this game than some of the previous ones, but there's a couple of extra steps to get to some of them. Like, for instance, the way this game breaks down is that there's different colonies, like little
encampments.
Encampments of armies or whatever. And whenever you go through the story, you need to free it from... the flame clock, the thing that will kill them if they don't keep murdering people.
Mm-hmm. Right, because there are no, like, towns. Like, these encampments are also, like, there's, like, shops, because they'll tutorialize how to buy items at a shop.
But the shops are so, like, almost borderline pointless.
Right, it's four or five accessories that you've probably already gotten as drops.
Yeah, so it's just, the shops are just dumb.
They're a shop where you buy, like, collectibles that you probably already have 30 or 40 of.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I don't know. I think that the shops are probably there to make it feel more like a town as you would, like, in any video game or, like, any RPG. Like, okay, you're in a town, here's a shop, here's a rest place, like, an inn. But otherwise, like, there's a bunch of people walking around giving you side quests. But, like, because there's no cities in this game. It's all just these military encampments.
Mm-hmm. Which apparently, like, story-wise, there's a city we're trying to get to. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so these little military encampments, there are now and then you'll see, like, a little exclamation bubble. And you just kind of, like, drift near them and, like, poke your head around a pole or something. Just kind of...
yeah, you're creeping on these people.
You eavesdrop a little bit. Yeah, just hide in the tree above them. And just listen to their conversation, and then you go and discuss it mm-hmm. as a team. And then some of those, just a conversation that gives you 100 experience, and then the other ones will open up a quest for you.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's just a dude sitting there that will give you a quest. Like, it's just kind of odd how they do some of these.
Little question marks around the map, and sometimes it's a fight. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's, like, actually someone who's given you a quest or something. But, like, a lot of the things in, like, Xenoblade 1 and 2, like, the quest, like, go out and kill this many monsters of this type. Go out and find these collectible things lying on the ground and bring them back here. That sort of stuff isn't in there. Like, if you pick up the shiny stuff on the ground, there is a separate quest page where you can turn those in. And the first time you do it, you'll get, like, a piece of equipment back that you probably already have. And then you could keep on doing it if you want to farm affinity points to upgrade the town areas. And, you know, upgrading the affinity for the colonies will pretty much just get you more side quests. Yeah. So you can farm more experience stuff.
Which, that's one thing I do want to bring up briefly, is the items in the game. So, like, the big thing with Xenoblade, well, not the big thing, but one of the things that makes Xenoblade unique is just the random shit just lying on the ground you don't pick up. And in previous one, like in Xenoblade 1, they weren't really that helpful. They were for boosting affinity between characters.
Side quests.
Some side quests.
Yeah, and they do that thing in Xenoblade 1 where if you pick one up, you get, like, the premonition that you'll have a side quest later on, so don't sell this shit. And really, they didn't really net you much money. And money wasn't hugely impactful in Xenoblade 1, yeah. So there's never really a reason to sell stuff except to clear inventory.
Yeah, so when I played Xenoblade 1, I pretty much just grabbed stuff if it was on the way where I was walking. I wasn't going to, like, step to the other side of the road for it, so to speak.
I did all the time.
I just did it every single time. I just didn't.
If I had every side quest completed, I'd be like, nope, still going to grab it.
Like, it was just one of those things. And then Xenoblade 2, they're a little bit more helpful because there was more of those turn-in quests, so to speak. Like, you had to get to a certain percentage of giving this guy shit in order to do things. In this game, it's just stupid helpful. Like, all the stuff that you get. There's side quests. You need the stuff to make gems.
Oh, yeah.
There's those percentage quests, like I mentioned before. I mean, it just is beneficial just to grab the shit. And they're giving you more purpose with it than in previous games. And it's good that they're doing that.
Yeah, for sure. And the fact that you can, like, complete those, like, collectible quests over and over again if you just, like, want to turn stuff in and, like, have them be purposeful, it's really great that they do that. And, like, and the gem crafting is a whole lot more interesting in this one. Cause was it in Xenoblade 2? No, I don't remember.
Xenoblade 2 didn't have gem crafting. It had those weird skill trees.
Right.
To develop the characters, which required...
So, yeah, in...
Some...
In Xenoblade 1...
To meet certain conditions, it required you.
In Xenoblade 1, you had your equipment. In Xenoblade 3, you pretty much have 3 equipment slots for your accessories, but you don't get them all right away. It's not until, like, get to level 50 that you can use all 3.
Yeah.
In Xenoblade 1, you had equipment for everybody, like head, chest, legs, gloves, shoes. There's, like, 5 different pieces of equipment.
Fuck.
And different pieces of equipment could have slots to attach gems, and gems could do things just like buffing up stats or like adding a status condition resistance.
In order to make those gems, those most confusing shit I've ever...
It was just basically a mini game.
It's just the, like, spreadsheets and shit. Like, I couldn't... Like, that game was super confusing.
In Xenoblade 3, it feels much more well integrated into the game because it is collectibles or loot that you get off of, you know, killing enemies and such. And it really makes it cool to, like, actually look at the gems that you... It gives you, like, just a grid. And there's, what, four different... like, 20 different types of gems in total. Like, four for, like, there's, different classes. And,
yeah. And I think there's five and four different categories.
Right. So 20 total different gems. And it will tell you exactly what you need in order to craft that next gem. And so most of the times, like, when you unlock a new level, you'll probably have a good 75% of what you already need if you've just kind of been keeping up with the game and grabbing shit. But it'll tell you, like, hey, you need something from this enemy type. So you know, like, hey, let's just go out and find those enemies, and if we find, like, shiny ones, then cool, we'll get them, probably get the thing we need to upgrade this gem. And it's been really great because, like I was saying, every...
Completionist in you is just...
Right, I want to upgrade every gem. So, and it's handled really well because rather than cluttering you with all these gems, like, no, here's your 20, and once you get, like, that initial level 1, you can just start equipping it to anybody. It's like you have one of those, anyone can equip that thing. Yeah. And when you upgrade it, then everyone just is able to upgrade that equipped that upgraded version of it.
It's just what you have. It just even automatically does it. Right. Which is super nice.
Yeah, it doesn't give you, like, this clutter of stuff. And when you go to equip accessories, they always have, like, ones that are going to be beneficial to your job type sorted for you first, which is great. And, of course, you can get creative and try to do different things with different job classes. Well, I have a healer, but it's also pretty good at attacking, so I'm going to make it an attacking healer.
Or this one's really good at breaking, so maybe I'm going to do a break extension item or things like that. Like, there's a lot of different intricate strategies you can do.
Yeah, but the fact that, like, and when you change classes, it will auto change, like, equipment or gems for you so that you can just kind of focus on what it is you want to be doing so you don't have to mess around in menus all that much if you don't want to. Mm. Yeah, it's really great the way that they've sort of streamlined things, and it feels much more cohesive than, say, something like a Xenoblade 2, where there were just tons of different menus and menus for every single different character. And they all had different ways to upgrade and, like, all sorts of different things. And you saw things like cooking, but it's just more like, hey, here's the things that you have and here's the things you can cook, do it or don't do it.
And so far, like, the cooking stuff is really just either an XP boost, a CP boost, or drop boosts. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not doing anything like boosting your attacks or defense. So right now it's just kind of like, if I can, yeah. If not, then who cares? Yeah, like, there's a couple times where I don't cook because I just don't quite have the ingredients, or I don't want to burn the few that I have to make a particular recipe.
Yeah, or you just don't even think of it.
Yeah. Cooking is such a passive thing. Like, if there's a fight coming on, but, like, this is going to be a boss fight, it's still not even that beneficial because it's just boosting gains, like, right, XP and stuff. So you're not like, oh, no, I didn't boost my attack. Like,
and if you're playing this game, the way I think they want you to play it, which is just kind of, like, your goals over there, but kind of poke around. Look around and see what you can find. You're going to be gaining so much bonus experience that you can trivialize any fight if you want to.
It's absolutely certain. My last boss fight, I was 11 levels up on him.
Nice.
I just crushed his feet. I just was like, go bite that curb. I'm going to just stomped his head in.
Assume the position.
Off to hell you go. Like, it was just...
it's so funny. Is it like... Early on in the game, I was like, yeah, I'll take the extra levels. Why not? But it must have been, like, right around hour 20, 25. I was like, never mind. Like, I'll cash in the extra experience at some point for sure. But at this point, I don't need to. I did earlier today give myself 2 levels. I probably could have given myself, like, 9 or 10. But I just, like, 2 extra levels just to kind of make my way through this cave a little bit easier. But I was still aggroing enemies. I might have been able to give myself enough levels to where they would ignore me.
I mean, that's the crazy thing is you hit a certain point in this game where you pretty much don't really need to fight anymore.
Yeah.
Like,
And as I was messing around with menus today, there's an auto battle mode. And it will, like, fight the battles for you unless it's, like, a tyrant or a boss battle, I think it said.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you, like, want to fight enemies, like, maybe try to get some drops or something, but don't actually feel like going through the process of, like, activating your arts and doing, like, all your timing and stuff, just tell the game to do it for you if you feel like it. But, so, yeah, it's cool, like... You can, like, if what you want to do the most is just kind of look around and not engage with fights unless you activate them, give yourself all this experience and things will just ignore you.
Yeah, it's been, I mean, your boss fights would be the easiest thing in the world.
Yep.
Just
yep.
Put the controller down. Start the fight, put the controller down, go make a sandwich or something.
All right, I'll be back when you're dead.
So, we haven't discussed one thing. So, in Xenoblade... One, you have three party members.
Right.
In Xenoblade X, how many party? That was the one I
three.
Never. You have three.
And there's a fourth optional, like, tag along.
Okay. Xenoblade 2, you have three characters, but they had three blades that are just there.
Right, who just kind of stood behind
yeah,
you.
Yeah, they just kind of, like, gave you moral support.
So there were six on the field, but only three of them were actually doing things.
In this one, there is six slash seven characters.
Yeah, there's the seventh hero.
And you can switch between six of them at will during battle.
Right.
There's so much shit going on the screen.
Oh, yeah.
And then each of those characters
can lay down buff fields that you can stand in.
There's so much going on in every little combat. Like, I'm just fighting this one Crabble, and they're I can't even think of a good way to... They're just bashing the shit out of this thing.
Yeah, this
poor, guy has nowhere to go.
This poor little hermit crab. Six assholes just came up to him and started, like, hammering at him with swords and hammers.
It's just so messed up. And then two of them get... They pair up, and then they become a big giant motherfucker. This game has so much going on.
They go through Morphin time.
It's absolutely insane to keep track on everything.
And then when you get to a certain point where, like, first they only morph into, like, the darker, like, the blackish purpley form. And then later on you get the other form, which is the whitish red.
And you can switch those at will
on the fly. They all have their own arts and skills. And that's, you know... one of the main reasons that I'm not trying to get super over-leveled is because the fun part's going to be like, okay, I've built up my inner link to where I can execute the best arts and have, like, the best effects on them. So then I can, you know, be playing as this one character, and when I interlink, I'll be able to break and then swap to the other half of it and then topple and then launch and then swap to the other half and do the smash and then execute a chain attack.
It's just... Oh my god, there's so much going on in the field all at once, and it's so difficult. Those field buffs that drop, I really like the concept of that, but my guys really love just running around like chickens with their heads cut off. It's so tough to, like, properly aim those at certain points.
You could try to use the command to where they all form up behind you.
Yeah, you could do that, but then... If you have an attacker that benefits on positioning, they're now losing from positioning buffs.
Right.
So there's so many different tactics and strategies and things based on what classes and what arts of said classes, and then what secondary arts of said class. This is spreadsheet the video game. This is absolutely absurd.
And I don't think the battle system has quite yet... gotten to the elegance of Xenoblade 2, where you know what you're building toward.
Oh, it's just a reflex on Xenoblade 2.
Right.
You do that with your eyes closed.
The entire time, you know, like, okay, these are the things that I want to lay down because I'm working to this point, and then when I get there, the battle is going to be over. Whereas in this one, I'm sure, like, as I unlock more classes and I'm able to more highly customize everyone's moveset, it'll get there to the point where, you know, I'll initiate a battle and know exactly how I'm going to be able to set things up in order to, like, do my break, topple, launch, smash over and over again. It's not there yet, but it is, like, this interesting mix. There's a lot to think about. This interesting mix of Xenoblade 1 and 2. It has, like, the 2 setup to where things are mapped to your face button rather than having a bar at the bottom of things to select from. But, you know, you have your your character class arts, the three to choose from there. And then you have your fusion arts, which are ones that you've learned from other classes.
Which you can use those individually, or you can fuse them with your primary arts.
Right, and that's going to build up. It's going to build up your inner link for when you do your Ouroboros form. But it's just because your arts that you have equipped are going to charge up based on like which faction that job has come from. So there's one faction, it's more like Xenoblade 2, where your arts charge up based on your auto attacks.
Yep.
And then the other faction is more like Xenoblade 1, where it's just on a cooldown. So having fusion arts that match up well together, like if you want to be doing a lot of fusion so you can get to your Ouroboros form, having one that has a very long cooldown paired up with something that charges up quickly from auto attacks is not going to be a good pairing. But sometimes you also do want to take effects into consideration. A lot of times when I'm building up a character, I'm trying to think about, okay, like how many arts can I give it that are going to contribute to Break Topple Smash Launch or Break Topple Days Burst? Which to me is like the funnest part in a fight.
Oh, yeah, that.
Can I pull this off?
This in Chapter 4, it's so difficult to get to Burst or to Smash. Like, Smash is impossible in my mind right now. It can be done. I cannot figure out a good way to do it because I think there's only two characters that can launch.
Yeah, launch is a hard skill to come by, and so is Smash. Like, yeah. There's not a whole lot of ways to do those two particular techniques. I can pretty consistently, you know, of course, depending on who's got what job. Like
Break Topple Days.
Yeah, that one happens
quite
a bit.
That's super easy.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to getting to the point where these other things start to come into play. But it's really cool when you do get a burst or a smash because it gives you like a freeze frame.
Oh, it's so good. You're like, oh, this
finally got there.
So gratifying.
Have you gotten a good handle on chain attacks?
Chain attacks, I'm getting there better. Especially now, for the longest point, when you first get chain attacks are a very weird concept because opposed to the other ones, I can't even really remember. And like Xenoblade 2, it was just a matter of selecting who goes next in the chain attack, and it's about matching up the colors to create different combos and stuff. In Xenoblade 1, I can't even remember what chain attacks were in Xenoblade 1.
In Xenoblade 1, it worked, you know, sort of similarly to it does in 3, where, you know, you pretty much, each character takes a turn. In Xenoblade 3, you get to pick the character, but in Xenoblade 1, every character picks a turn, and you keep the chain going based on what sort of color-coded arts that you're using. It is to your advantage to, one, set up your Break Topple days.
Yep.
And Xenoblade 1, because they're going to be doing more damage.
Because you can't burst, so there's no burst or smash on a basic art. So, unfortunately, you can't get to that step in it.
In 3, you mean?
In 3.
Mm. There's no burst or smash in basic arts yet.
Yes.
Hopefully, we
get a class with that.
But the chain attacks in 3, yeah, you have, like, you can pretty much go 3 rounds, sometimes 4, of selecting characters, depending on how much of the meter you're consuming. Get that meter on the right that's telling you how much you have left to go. But yeah, when it kind of encourages you to use an attacker first, because an attacker first will get a boost. And again, what you're trying to do is build up a meter. And the fuller you get the meter, the more characters you're going to be able to use in the next round as well. Otherwise, mm-hmm. like if you use 3 characters, you're usually, if you're just kind of going through a basic round, if you use 3 characters, you're going to get one of them back in the next round. So your pool of characters you're picking from is getting smaller and smaller.
And the chain attack ends when either the meter runs out or you run out of characters to do things with.
Mm-hmm. But when you get through, once you get to that 100% mark, then the character you selected at the beginning is going to do a big attack. And you can get through 3 or 4 big attacks, depending on how efficient you are being with your chain attacks. But if you're getting to past that 100% mark, if you get to 150, you're getting 2 characters back for the next round. If you get to 200%, you're getting three characters back for the next round.
Oh, that 200% when you hit that is so gratifying.
Yeah, when you get to the amazing. Yeah.
Like, yes, that's right. I'm awesome. That's right.
And depending on how you're playing, you know, the further you get into the chain attack, the easier it is to get to that point. Because there are certain characters who... Oh, man. Okay, let's start at the beginning. When you initiate your chain attack, you're selecting your character to who's going to be doing the big attack at the end of that round. And they'll have different effects, like buffs or debuffs, or the chances to do crits, that sort of thing.
Yep.
During the fight. And then once you select that, the big attack character, you're then selecting your individual characters, and they're each going to have a different sort of assigned value that's going to contribute to getting to that 100% mark to where you get the big attack.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's kind of like a base value too. Like when they do their turn, they're gaining a little couple extra points and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you're like, you're roughly going to be around here. Sometimes I get surprised. I'm like, wow, the fuck do you get that? Like it was just.
And then sometimes you get like a multiplier in there, like, oh, you get out plus 25%. And that like it's real frustrating when you get like just a big enough multiplier to where it inches you to like 101, 102. It's like, no, I had this other guy who was already at 80 who was going to bring me over the 200% mark. And
you fuckers. Yeah. Like, yeah.
But what they do, an attacker will get a bonus for going first. A healer class is not going to put you over that 100%. They're going to cap you at 99. So that's a good one to use when you're close, but you want to go try to get over that 150% mark. So again, like party construction matters because you want to have a balance.
Yep.
And if you're able to do a break, topple, launch, smash within a chain attack, that's also to your advantage because that's going to do a lot of damage.
And then after you hit a certain point, the first point where you select your character to do the special attack at the end, if you choose two of them that are pairs for Ouroboros, you unlock an Ouroboros form, which you want to do that when you're almost out of energy because it does end your chain attack entirely at the end of it. But the Ouroboros form unlocks all your characters again to build up your 100% plus. And when you complete that, it deals a lot of damage.
Mm-hmm.
But because of that, it ends the chain attack. So you want to do that, like, this is the last round I'm going to get. Don't have enough energy to do another round. Let's just end it with this. God, do I love that.
Yeah.
I love the Ouroboros, and it's so good.
And when you initiate a chain attack, when you're in your Ouroboros form at Interlink level 3, you then get to do the chain attack with that from the beginning.
Yep.
And you get to do like back-to-back. You get to do one side of the Ouroboros, and the other Ouroboros of those two paired characters gets to do one.
It's yeah. So much fucking damage. Chain attacks, there are certain points in the game where there was one boss to unlock the Sword and Shield hero. Mm-hmm. I forget the Zeon, I forget what the class is called, Crusader or whatever. And you had to fight one of these consoles, one of the enemies, big enemies in the game. This guy was kicking my teeth in. Like I died to him like 4 times. I was slightly underleveled, but I was like, I can fucking do this. And I finally beat him by getting like 3 chain attacks off.
Nice.
In the entire fight. Like I was just living off chain attacks. Like I was just holding on by the skin of my teeth just to get to a chain attack so I can get some heals in, mm-hmm. so I can get some damage down. And now it's just chain attacks are your saving grace on a lot of points.
Mm.
Like he's at half HP. I could probably kill him with a chain attack. Like it's absolutely absurd how much damage you're getting off of these chain attacks.
And a lot of times, like in the big fights, it's like, okay, let's lay down some art, let's keep the things moving to build up that chain attack, and then just ready, okay, chain attack, and let's get through this. Just finish it off.
The seconds available, go, because if they live through it, just build up another chain attack.
But and if they live through it, you've probably built up a lot of buffs. So, you know, if they have anything left by the end of the fight, all your characters are probably fully healed and buffed up. And like, okay, well, let's just finish this off. And
I live for chain attacks. Yep. And it's a nice little, the fight's going really hectic. There's a lot of chaos going on. I don't know what's going on. Pop a chain attack, take a breather.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not timed. You're not in a rush. You can get out a calculator if you want. Like, it's just.
Yeah, it's real good.
Fill that ship to hell for them.
So, like any Xenoblade, I spent a lot of time wandering, just kind of going and doing stuff. When we were talking about this on the official show, the first, two chapters, it's pretty, railed for you.
Yeah. They really want you just to go.
Yeah, there were parts, and I mentioned this before, where I try to go in direction, no, you can't go that way yet. I'm like, fuck you, game. We'll go that way if I want. But yeah. There's an invisible wall, wouldn't let me go anywhere.
Or when your characters go like, well, listen, fucker, we're going this way.
Uh-huh. But once you get to chapter 3, it really opens up for a long time. Mm-hmm. And then late chapter 4, kind of in the place where you're at, if you want to go through the critical path of the game, you're kind of funnel through one particular area. I think when they want to hit those story beats, they're like, let's say that they're big fans of their own writing.
They really are.
They really love what they're doing here.
But I do really love this story. Mm. It's so fucking good.
It's bonkers.
It's insane. I don't know what the fuck is happening.
There was that thing with Uni. No, we're not going to do spoilers. Story spoilers on this show. But the thing with Uni on that battlefield that she finds, you're like, what? No. No.
They haven't addressed it again. They're like, hey, here's this really big thing. We're going to go do something else for a little while. You're like, you motherfuckers.
Do you ever get to a point where you're going through a cutscene oh, this is a Taeyeon story. Fine.
Oh, there's so many Taeyeon stories. They really like that character.
No, they sure do.
I mean, more than the main character right now.
Pushing up his glasses all the time.
Just constantly. Mm. Just actually is all over the place.
You do get, as you move forward in the main story, you do get a little bit more with Noah. You get some more with Mio, too. But yeah, the entire, this is an ensemble cast. You know, Noah and Mio are your main characters in quotes. But the supporting cast is just as strong characters as them. Mm-hmm. Taeyeon notwithstanding, he's fine.
He got better. Uh-huh. He was incredibly insufferable in the beginning. Mm-hmm. But now I'm like, all right, Taeyeon, do your thing. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's
good. You got Lance, who's your hothead. And Senna, who's the girl with the gall.
Lance keeps doing his thing. I just want to keep on. I just want to go, man, it's Lance time. No, that's not right.
Well, he does kind of. He serves the function of Ryan. He's the tank.
But he's this big giant guy with a big giant weapon that just yells about himself constantly.
But he's not the BFF the way Ryan was.
No.
Him and Noah have more of a rivalry than they are buds.
Yeah.
You know, they're not exactly living under conditions where you're making friends with people.
Which, with what they're saying at the end of these battles, I mean, so many times have we heard Senna being the girl with the gall and MVP. Do you think they could have just put a couple more in just to mix it up a bit?
Maybe.
God damn.
I mean,
so much of that.
And I think a lot of that also is a function of the classes that are that they're performing as. They're the ones finishing off fights.
Yeah.
Whereas, every once in a while I'll have, Uni chime in with something. Yeah. But... Yeah. It's Senna a lot because most of the time she's an attacker.
God, Senna's, I really like Senna.
Yeah,
I use Senna a lot for my focus. I pretty much just use Senna myself. I'm just constantly running around with her.
For me, I'll kind of shuffle around who I'm playing as, kind of depending on who's an attacker, because there are a couple of tank classes that are. Fun to use, but most of the time I just want to be moving around dealing damage rather than trying to wall up and absorb.
I typically don't like the tanks, but I do like certain healer classes. They're a lot of fun because you gotta really be paying attention to your positioning to get the field buffs on and to hit people with your healings, get them in range for heals, and your timing with that. So the healer class is very strategic and I do enjoy playing it, but it's also the class where I will fuck the entire fight up because I'm just I'm not quite close enough.
It took me forever to realize, and I didn't realize it until you pointed out, but only healers can revive people.
Yeah. There's an item you can equip in their accessories to allow them to do it if they're not a healer, which is a huge waste of that slot.
Right. You have three accessory slots.
So you can pick somebody up.
Come on. Just have a balanced party.
Yeah, exactly. You got to have two healers, two tanks, two attackers.
Unless there's some sort of class combination you can do later to where you have an attacker who's also just kind of doing healing by happenstance with a fusion art or something.
Yeah.
But you need them to be able to revive too. Maybe.
There's a couple times where I'll take the Zeon guy and go triple healers or triple attackers.
Mm.
I've done that a few times, and that tends to work out. It's just that Crusader class isn't great for taunts. Hmm. He doesn't pull a lot of aggro, and he has one ability that is a taunt, but that's only on one target.
And with the hero characters, you can't... Maybe you can.
You can change their abilities.
But they're gems.
They're gems, no.
So you can't give them the one where you just start with a bunch of aggro.
No. Hmm. Well, at least I haven't tried with gems. I don't think you can.
I haven't. Now that I
switch right here, I'll fucking do this. Sorry about rant about something.
I might not have tried either. What else? It's a nice looking game.
It's beautiful. They really are getting. I'm surprised that they're able to get this kind of stuff out of the Switch.
Yeah, the Switch. They're really overachieving here. Like there are times when, you know, we'll get a game like Pokemon Legends Arceus.
You can't switch gems.
Where that's a negative. You can't switch gems.
Can't switch gems on the hero.
You know, where there are games that'll run on the Switch. You're like, okay, well, you know, they've clearly made compromises here. The frame rate is dipped. The resolution is dipped. Like,
a lot of times... compromises is there's a lot of, like, desert and cave maps. I mean, that's their compromise.
But, you know, they do a really great job of having these open environments. There are times where, like, if you're really up high, it's not, like, rendering a bunch of stuff, but it's a marked improvement over something like a Legend Arceus. There's also times where, like, in the distance, you'll see a monster and it's got a lower frame rate than things that are closer up to you. Definitely not as egregious as something like a Legends Arceus, and I don't mean to pick on Legends Arceus. Really great game. But they've really been able to pull off something from a tech standpoint that I think is remarkable.
Yeah, they're just the amount of just stuff in this game, and the way it's absolutely insane to me that I didn't know the Switch could do this.
Yeah, and the fact that the battles run pretty smoothly with everything that's going on during these fights is pretty great.
All the blue and red lines constantly all over the place. Just, you can't who's aggroed on who.
There's got to be
fucking A.
There's got to be a way to turn those off.
But who do you know who's aggroed on who?
You just got to trust your tanks, man. But there's the soundtrack is allegedly very good. Like I think it's pretty good. Like there are no songs that stand out to me as annoying. But a lot of times I also have like a podcast on while I'm playing this game, because when I start, like I try to not overdo it, and I try to get like a couple hours in, maybe a few extra hours if I'm like on the day off work and the kids are at school. But a lot of times just kind of get sucked in and realize, like, okay, I've been going for 4 hours. Maybe I should stop. Because my hands are starting to get stiff again.
You get these weird misshapen claws for hands.
One of these days is going to happen.
I love to hold you, child, but I just can't.
I'm saying that to my Switch. Earlier today, I felt like, because usually my hands will get a little bit sore between, kind of like in that fleshy part between your thumb and your forefinger.
Yeah.
And early said, like, I could kind of feel it starting to happen. Like, it's not like...
Yeah, you feel like going on.
Yeah, not as much as it has been. So I started playing, like, keyboard style.
Yeah, when you do that with your little T-Rex arms, I've seen you do that a couple
times. And that's usually because my hands are starting to hurt, but I'm not going to stop. I'm not going to stop. I'm not. But if I still feel a little bit sore, I'll probably play that way again tomorrow. But usually after a couple of days, I'll be fine. The last time my hands were starting to hurt, I can't even remember what game had been out. But it's because I was like trying to play like two different Switch games, and I was playing a game on my DS at the same time. So I was just doing way too much. I've been trying to cut down on the amount of time that I'm playing games, because
you have two children, you're just watching their childhood slip away.
I don't care about their childhood.
I can't wait till they're adults and out of the house.
One of the most dangerous things for me personally is there was a there's a Nintendo Switch parental control app, and that parental control app will tell you like in detail how many hours you spent a day playing what game. And I deleted it for this specific reason, because I was spending too much time playing games. But then I had to reinstall it because Ripley had done something that locked me out of doing something on my Switch, and to like actually put in my parental control pin. Like, I have no idea what that is. I gotta get the app back. So I reinstall the app on my phone, and I'll get like competitive with myself. And I'll be like, They give like the end of the year thing. Like in this year, you spent 1,400 hours playing games on your Switch. Great. Let's see if I can do that again. I'll get out the calculator. No, this is bad. No one should behave this way. This is bad.
Oh my God.
I'll get out the calculator and say, okay, if I want to like match that, if I want to do another 1,400 hours, I got to play for 4 hours a day. Cool. Let's do it. And then I'll like be looking at my Switch like, I've only done 3 hours today. Got to dive back in. Got to get that 4 hour mark.
Oh my God.
No, it's not good.
See, this reminds me, Jeremy has this thing where I don't know if he still does it, but it's a website. It was free, but now you have to pay for it because it got so popular. But it was writing 750 words a day. And this sounds like this. It's that the writing thing sounds much healthier than trying to get to 4 hours of your video game.
I guess. I guess, I mean, you're still like spending a lot of time in front of a screen.
Yeah, but at least you're like challenging your mind in a different way.
Are you saying you're not flexing your mind playing Xenoblade? There's a lot going on.
Oh my God, you're right. Well, you got a point on that one. Xenoblade is like, holy God.
So what I've been doing, what I should do is just uninstall that app. But what I've been doing,
because it's doing the opposite for you than what it's supposed right, to be doing.
Right. But what I've been doing is I kind of like cheat, whereas you know, I'll still want to. Don't you judge me, Les. Don't you judge me. I'm bearing my soul here, you motherfucker.
I have to cheat in the parental control game.
So can I explain? Let me explain, you judgmental prick.
Go on. Don't tell me how this isn't horrible. Go on.
I'll use Animal Crossing to cheat. So I still like feel the compulsion, like, let's get 4 hours a day. Let's do it. But I'll just like let Animal Crossing run for an hour, and I'll check in, like talk to people on the island, but I won't do much. But I'll just like, okay, it's time for us to get ready for school, and I'll do this. Like if I'm getting the kids ready for school, if I'm getting ready for work, I'm just letting Animal Crossing run.
Oh my God.
And that way I get my hour of Animal Crossing in, and then.
Oh my God, John. This is the part where we need to, like, find a group.
Are we going to have an intervention? I've always wanted an intervention. Ideally, someone else's, but I'll take my own if that's how I get one.
I have to hit 4 hours a day. God damn.
It's been bad.
Do you ever sit there and, like, well, I've had 4 hours a day, but it's, like, not noon yet. If I get another 4 hours, I could take a break tomorrow.
No.
Do you ever do shit like that?
No, see, that's
get some hours in the bank.
No, that's the thing. It won't matter if I bank hours the next day. I'll, like, look at the thing. All right, I got 3 hours. Good enough. But I mean, it's bad with Xenoblade, because Xenoblade's a game where I don't want to stop.
Yeah.
Anything else about Xenoblade that we need to address here?
I mean, there's just so much of it. I mean, we're going to be coming back to this probably every mini show for a while. Mm. Just a bit by bit. Here's my Xenoblade update. Like, it just...
We talked about the classes. We talked about the battles. We talked a bit about the world. Field skills are back.
I forgot one thing about the world and exploring that I wanted to bring up. They really utilize every little spot in a way that, like, going off to a side area is going to be beneficial in some way or another. There's a container, there's a husk, there is something in the corners. Opposed to like other games where like, oh, there's just a fucking item over here, who cares? But this one, there's always, I haven't found a spot where I've just wandered off the beaten path around this corner and there just simply wasn't anything. I was like, or there's like I said that.
Or a hidden area or a view, something's going to get you some experience.
Yeah, they really utilize this game very perfectly where it rewards you every time you decide to explore.
Yeah, and it's been really good because it's got a really great sense of discovery for that reason, for the reason that you said that they're always getting you the reward.
I'm sad that they don't have... What Xenoblade was it where you got... Was it like extra experience or something for completing a map in exploration?
In Xenoblade... I don't remember Xenoblade 2, but in Xenoblade 1 for sure... If you found all the landmarks, it would auto-fill the rest of the map. So that's kind of like your indication, like you found all of the things. Something that I like that they're doing in Xenoblade 3 that I don't remember if they did in any other ones, when you beat a tyrant, one of the really powerful random monsters, and it like gives it a grave, you'll be able to warp that grave. It gives you like an icon on your map that you did.
That's the grave warp is nice. I don't think they have grave warps in 2. Because there wasn't graves in 1, was there?
There were graves, but you couldn't warp to them.
Yeah, okay. So I didn't... Yeah, okay, so there were graves in 1, but in... 2, I don't think you could warp to them. I could be wrong.
I don't think so either. I think you might be right.
So I know there was that one that I farmed a lot for legendary gems.
Was that the big bird thing in the cave?
Yeah, like the bird bug raptor thing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And I always remember I had to go into the cave.
Mm-hmm. And then that was a good one because you do like your launch smash combo with high luck. It's got a really good chance of dropping legendaries.
Yeah.
But... neither here nor there. I mean, this game, a really great sense of exploration and discovery. It is, like, at its core, an RPG. You're not doing things like climbing. You're not doing things like platforming or double jumps or anything like that. It is...
I would love a double jump. Can you give me a double jump? Give me a field spell that's a double jump. Like, can I... Just fuck, I want a double jump in as you play the game.
And you don't even really jump very high. Like, no. if you can, like, even compared to Xenoblade 1, Xenoblade 1, you don't jump very high, or in Xenoblade 2, you probably jump a little bit higher. And Xenoblade X, you fucking sail. Like you're like Hulk in that Edward Norton movie, or was it Eric Bana? I don't remember. But you really, like, bounce all over the place in X. But, you know, jumping around isn't the way they want you exploring. They want you to kind of, like, hug the walls and poke around in order to find your way up to things. But I really like when you get the new field skills and automatically, like, okay, I know exactly where I want to go test this out, see what I can find. And one of them is even part of the critical path of the game. You got to go do a hero quest in order to get one of the field skills, which I thought was really great.
You're talking about the sand one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a side one. That's not, yeah.
Yeah, because like, that opens up a couple of other different areas that if you're not doing side quests, you wouldn't be able to get into. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't anything that I can think of that was critical in these areas that are cornered off by that field skill. Now, there's a ton of like side stuff that you could do in there that you wouldn't be able to do.
Yeah, there's even this one area where there's just a bunch of sand pits, and you didn't have that skill. You had to warp out every single time you fell into a sand pit.
Yep, which would be hilarious.
Yeah. It's like, oh.
But yeah.
Rubs the lotion on its skin.
But yeah, very good. It's a pretty good game.
Yeah, it's not bad.
All right.
I guess it's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a couple other games that I had finished off. One that I'm nearly finished with. I finished off Live Alive. And that was a pretty cool little RPG.
Is it worth it?
I forget the price. But yeah, this is probably worth it. I mean, Xenoblade 3 is like the go-to RPG probably for a while. But definitely like put Live Alive on a wish list so you can get to it at some point. I'll be
borrowing yours.
It's just like the inverse experience of Xenoblade 3. You can get through like these small little stories very quickly. The longest one, like maybe 2 or 3 hours. I think I spent a total of 23, 24 hours in the game. But I spent a lot of time at the end game grinding up levels just for fun. Mm-hmm. It turned out that I didn't really end up needing to take on the final boss. But the... there are like alternate endings to the game, but the different alternate endings, like you're not having to worry about things that you're doing in the individual chapters affecting like the ending. All of the different alternate endings are going to be based on things that you do in the final chapter. So it's not like you're worrying about like messing things up earlier on, which is good.
So one thing I don't know is the premise of this game. You have different chapters, which just take place in different times.
Right.
Are you ever one character traveling through all these things, or is it just a collection of like short games? Is it like,
so we'll
how do I view this game?
So we'll do minor spoilers here.
Okay.
But you know, we've already gone through all the Xenoblade stuff. That's all you really need to hear. That's the most important game.
Yeah, we already lost half our people right now because they're like, oh, they're done with, you know, they fuck this, the rest of this.
So minor spoilers for Live Alive. There is the final chapter of the game. Is when all of the characters become playable at the same time. So each individual chapter is following a character or a group of characters, a maximum 4. Most chapters are one, sometimes two characters. But in the final chapter, you know, you pick your end game character, and then you're going throughout this section of the game, and every other character is recruitable. You'll find them. Sometimes you got to do like a little mini questing along the way to actually get them to join your party. But you can you have a max party of four. So, you know, you pick your end game character, and then you can go recruit three of the other main characters from the other chapters. And there's like one chapter in particular, ancient China chapter, where your main character is variable depending on how you played through that particular section of the game. Other than that, I don't think there's any real variation to what character ends up in the final chapter. But, you know, you have your main, then you select three more, then you go and take on the final boss. So there's no...
When you say your main...
When you start the final chapter, you have... It's like seven or eight, if I remember correctly, characters from previous chapters that you can pick from,
mm-hmm.
and you pick one that you're starting with, and then you go around and you recruit other ones into your party, or you can try to solo it if you feel like it.
Oh.
But pretty much the other members of your party are variable. You can have them like swap out, but that the one that
the
you
first
pick,
one you pick, kind of like an Octopath kind of thing.
Mm, yeah,
first guy you pick, that's he's with you for life.
Right, that's the one who's stuck in your party. But yeah, I mean, I thought that the battle system is interesting enough. I mentioned before, it's grid-based. It's like an active time bar. Anytime you select an action or move around on the grid, it's going to progress that time bar, kind of like a roguelike in that way. But every character has like their different skills. Sometimes there's a cast time for the different skills. They'll have different attributes, sometimes like elemental, like fire or water. Sometimes it's like an attribute, like this is a blunt attack, and this is like a slashing attack, or this is a psychic attack, that kind of thing. And enemies are going to have weaknesses. Enemies also are going to have different types of attacks that will sometimes spread out to different parts of the grid. So sometimes, like if an enemy has a cast time for an attack, there are times where sometimes you could move out of the way so that all of their attacks miss. I don't know. I didn't really find that to be a necessary point of the game. It's cool that it's there, but I never encountered a boss fight or like a powerful enemy fight where it was necessary to actually avoid the attacks. You could tank everything pretty well. It's not a super hard game. I've heard that there are like side bosses, like side super bosses, where maybe some of those tactics would come in handy. But if you know, if you're just looking for a light, breezy, turn-taking RPG, yeah, this will do it.
Okay.
Shorter game compared to something like a Xenoblade, where, you know,
maybe halfway through, if that.
In the time that it takes you to get through all of Live Alive, that's like the tutorial phase of Xenoblade.
Oh, God.
And it's so good. I saw this this article from, maybe The Escapist, some, you know, semi-reputable gaming site. Where
I like Escapist.
The article, like the tagline, the title was, there should be more games like Live Alive than Xenoblade 3. And pretty much the premise was, you know, most games should not strive to be as lengthy as something like Xenoblade 3. Most games should try to be these briefer experiences. And I don't disagree with the premise. Most games should not try to be 120 hours.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean that those games should exist. Like, I'm 100% on board for a lot of these lengthier games, maybe four times a year.
Exactly. Like, they're kind of like the highlight of the year, so to speak, but you're still trying to get... Well, you're still, like, doing these little games
mm-hmm.
here and there.
Yeah.
It's not a quantity over quality situation. Sometimes you want quality, sometimes you want quantity. I mean, mm-hmm. that's just...
And is Xenoblade to get both?
Yeah. There's a lot going on there.
But yeah, I think it's kind of things turning back around from, you know, the past, half decade we've had all these live service games, or the forever games, or just kind of play through and churn them forever.
Yeah.
And it's happening, of course, more quickly with the sort of journalist crowd, people who play games and talk about games and review games for a living because they want to be able to churn through stuff in order to be able to get to the next thing. Most people don't play through games that way. That's not how people consume video games. They're not like looking for the next thing. Like, oh, I'm going to buy this game. I'm going to play it. And when I'm done, maybe I'll look for something else.
I mean, some play people are, they only get a couple games here and there, and they need a game that they can really get a lot out of.
And then some people play games obsessively where they're tracking the amount of time they spend in every day.
Or they turn on a game just sort of runs in the background to write. Yeah, that parental control game. I got to take a look at that one. Apparently that's
it's raining in Shanghai. that Wii weather.
Oh man, I hope you saved.
That Wii weather game. Man, I could never get the hang of that one.
Forgot all about that comic.
So, yeah. What was it? Oh yeah, Live Alive. That's a cool game. I think it's really cool that Square Enix is doing these like callbacks to these games that never came out in North America. They're like a brand new game to us. Like Square Enix, they're knocking it out of the park recently. They've been on a hot streak. God, ever since like
they do?
Square Enix, they did Triangle Strategy. This year they did the Trials of Mana remake last year. They got the Final Fantasy VII remake on other systems.
They have another one coming out soon.
Yep.
Well, not soon. I don't know when.
I think it's like next year.
Yes. Yeah,
but they're doing like a remaster of Crisis Core, which is gonna be cool. And then they have they got a couple more things coming out this year. But yeah, they've been like most things that they've put out over the past couple years have been real good.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, Legends of Mana. That's still on my list to get through.
What was I got two other games we'll touch on real quick. I downloaded Metal Slug 5. It was like on a $3 sale, so I picked that one up. I have all the other Metal Slugs on my Switch. I don't have Metal Slug 5 yet, so I played through that one. It's interesting because Metal Slug 4 and 5 are kind of leaning more toward like what you would think of like a console run and gun shooter, like a Contra. Whereas Metal Slugs 1, 2, and 3 were very much these arcade, we're going to flood the screen with enemies and bullets, you're going to be pumping quarters into here. Whereas 4 and 5 felt more like, okay, we're going to slow down the rates which we're throwing enemies at you. Bosses are going to have more recognizable patterns. We're not going to have as many like death traps waiting for you. It feels more like a game that if you were to play it a few times, you'd actually be able to learn the things that were happening, be able to do things like deathless runs. Whereas, you know, I'm sure someone has done like a deathless run of Metal Slug 2.
Yeah.
But it takes like a level of mastery that you have to dedicate a ton of time in order to get through.
Yeah, Xenoblade level time.
Yeah. For a game like Metal Slug, again, it takes a half hour to run through. But yeah, it just feels more like they want you to be able to get through the end of this game without giving them $20 in quarters. So that was a cool one to work through. It only took about an hour to get to the end of it. And then I'm also playing Azure Striker Gunvolt 3, which came out at the end of last month. I've talked about these other games, the Gunvolt games and their spinoffs on previous podcasts. They're like little, they're sort of like Mega Man clones, little run and gun platformers. And, you know, I've liked them just fine in the past. Inti Creates is a development studio behind this one. They also worked on the Mega Man Zero games. I think it's really cool that they're still making games for the Switch. I hope they continue to do so. I don't know.
It sounds like you're not going to be positive on this one.
There's sort of the novelty and the luster has worn off. Like, oh, it's these guys who make Mega Man games, and now they're doing like Mega Man-ish games on Switch, and it's really fun. They did some on 3DS as well, I think. But when it comes down to it, like the sort of like platforming and level design things that you're doing aren't particularly great. I say that, but earlier today I played through one level in particular. I was like, oh, this is really interesting. One of the things that they do differently in this game is that they give you like a targeted dash. So in other Gunvolt games, the basic premise is you have a gun, but the gun isn't doing damage. The gun is basically putting like a target on your target, on the enemy that you're trying to attack, and then you're holding down a shoulder button to shock everything on the screen that you've tagged with these little bolts.
Oh.
So, and you're trying to, like, work up combos by tagging as many things as you can as quickly as possible and just shocking them all.
That's really... In a game like this, that really slows...
It's an interesting... And
slows down combat, so to speak.
And they also, like, they rate you based on the amount of time that you spend getting through a level. So it kind of... It wants you to play through it over and over again in order to really master these levels and get through these things quickly with eliminating all these enemies really efficiently. But it never really... The thing with these Gunvolt games is they never really got to the point where I was wanting to play through the levels over and over again, but also where you could, like, do these really cool things like tag 3 and 4 different enemies. There's always just, like, an enemy 2 in your way as you're dashing through the level. So it never really felt like they were really utilizing this mechanic that they had introduced really effectively. And, you know, the platforming and the run-and-gun stuff was fun enough. But it always kind of felt like unfulfilled. But in 3, they give you this new mechanic where, you know, you tag the enemy and you can do your attack. But then they also give you a mechanic where there's a different playable character where you tag the enemy and then you can press a button that, like, dashes right at them and does some damage. And then you can do, like, your melee attack right in their face. And if you tag multiple enemies, you'll dash around the screen and hit all of them. And depending, like, you can, like, tag the same enemy multiple times, depending on how many times you tag them, you'll do more damage. So there are times where you're like, okay, I'm going to tag this enemy once and this one 3 times because it's bulkier. I'm going to dash through and take them all out. And that's really cool. The other really cool thing that they've done is they made that sort of like tag and dash mechanic part of the platforming. So there are parts of the game where you don't really have ground to land on. You have to tag an enemy, dash to it, and it'll destroy it. And they'll give you like a little double jump in the air so you can tag the next enemy and dash to that and keep the chain going. And sometimes you got to do this vertically as well. And I think that's where the game is really excelling. That's when it's gotten the most interesting. The thing is, that didn't really happen until like the second to last level.
Oh, God.
So I really wish that they had experimented or done more with this like tag and dash mechanic when it came to platforming early on in the game, because I think that that showed a lot of promise. And it was really fun getting through these parts of the level where, you know, I had to stay suspended in the air for quite a while. I don't know, I thought that part was really, really cool. I wish they'd done it sooner. Oh, yeah. Anything else going on?
I've just been playing a ton of Xenoblade.
Yeah.
That's just how it is. I mean, now and then I'll play a round or two of TFT. Nothing to talk about with that. Planning on getting to Pokemon Unite here because Tyranitar will be out soon.
Oh, nice.
I think they have some leaks. I don't know how accurate these leaks are, but I think we're getting Dodrio, Mew, and Scizor.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know how accurate these are, but these are some leaks that somebody found or something. I don't know.
Some person on some message board.
Yeah.
Found a Twitter account.
Yeah, which is cool. I mean, those are 3 Dodrio. Like, what the fuck?
Right.
Like, that's so weird, but I'm oddly supportive of this.
Well, like, it's like the weird ones are the interesting ones. Because you remember, like, Pokken Tournament. That game where, like, it was a fighting game. And Chandelure was a playable character.
Yeah, this is awesome.
Yeah, they find weird ways of making Pokemon. Like, you don't think that would make any sense.
Yeah, right now my favorite to play in Unite is Cramorant. Fucking
nice.
And the weird derpy bird is it's so much fun.
You should have like Voltorb in that game. It just kind of rolls around.
Rolling around constantly. That'd be funny.
Yeah.
That'd be good.
Watch any of that Sandman show?
I have not. I want to read the book first.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, I just want to read the book first. Have you watched it?
Yeah, I watched through it.
Is it good?
Yeah. Yeah.
It sounds so convincing.
Here's the thing. Like, really great production value. Like, it's a really nice looking show. Netflix threw a lot of money behind it, that's for sure. I really liked how it wasn't like some other like limited series shows. Or like serialized shows where it's like one story arc that ties all, it was like 8 or 10 episodes, something like that. Mm-hmm. There were like the first episode was its own like contained thing. And then there's a couple of other episodes, or like the aftermath of that. I don't want to give too much away for you here, but like once like the like sort of aftermath was that, then they moved on to some other things. And there were some episodes that were just like self-contained. This is the character, and he's going to be interacting with this other character, or he's going to be doing this one thing. Or like there's an episode where you don't really see your main character all that much, but it has like a different setting and a different character that you're following. So it wasn't like they were trying to like take down this one big bad by the end and how they're going to get to it. The show let itself tell these other stories that, of course, like tied in.
Yeah.
Like they weren't just like worthless throwaway stuff. They were like, if it didn't really affect things all that much, it was at least very interesting to watch. But it wasn't so much about like everything building toward the one thing.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really refreshing.
They're not getting to fight Vecna and shit like that.
Right. It wasn't building all toward like the one final showdown with Vecna.
Yeah.
That took 2.5 hours. We judge, but I thought it was a good season.
I liked it.
Now the thing was, some of the acting is just atrocious. Just really, really bad. Especially when you get there are a couple of characters that are introduced in like the back half of the season, and just really terrible acting. Some of the writing, I don't want to like put the blame entirely on the actors who were bad. Like some of the writing, especially like the dialogue between a couple of the characters, is also quite bad.
I do wonder how accurate it is to the book, especially when you're saying things like that, where there's episodes that are contained, mm-hmm. if it's like in the spirit of the book or if it is following the book itself.
I get the feeling, and I haven't read any of the graphic novels, but I get the feeling.
Because you don't read books.
No. Does it have X-Men in it? Then get it away from me.
Is there pictures? I don't give a shit.
The feeling that I get is that there are probably a couple of different story arcs that they are tackling in one season. I get the feeling that there are things that were maybe unrelated in the graphic novels that they're tying together for the sake of trying to tell a lot of stories at the same time. I don't know. Maybe that's not the case at all. Maybe I'm totally misreading that. Yeah. But yeah. I don't know. I thought it was pretty good.
Okay.
Terrible acting notwithstanding.
I mean, they got Uncharted on there now.
They do have Uncharted on Netflix.
That's on my list to watch.
Ugh, I don't know. Ryan liked it, but...
I mean, like, I saw a bit of The Gray Man the other day. I didn't sit down and watch it, but I saw a couple of scenes.
To the fight in the fireworks factory?
I saw that briefly. And I'm sitting here watching this, and I'm like, yeah, it's ridiculous. They're in a fireworks factory blowing up. But it's just a dumb action movie, and... There is a place for that. And sometimes you just gotta watch a pointless action scene that's just...
Yeah, okay.
I'm just gonna watch this guy punch this guy and while explosions are going everywhere.
That's fair.
It's...
I think there...
it wasn't over the top, it wouldn't have been as enjoyable.
I think there are also some things about that movie about... just kind of derivative of things like The Bourne Identity or Leon the Professional.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're not, like, offensively so.
Yeah.
I didn't finish that movie, but it's not like... Like shaking my fist at the clouds, like, how dare you make this movie?
There's a place for this. I mean, you like those movies, you want a bit more of it, and then there you go. There's this. So, I mean, I think there's a place for it. It's on my list. I'm going to watch it at some point.
I watched The Black Phone last night.
How was that?
It was pretty good.
Oh.
It was pretty good. I thought, anyway. There are I don't know, I haven't really, like, looked at reviews for it, so I'm not sure what everyone else thought, but I thought it was pretty entertaining. Not like... super scary, like you would think of like a movie with like phantoms of dead kids talking to this other like kidnapped kid on the phone.
Oh, that's oof.
Do you know the premise of that?
I just know it's some kind of horror thing.
Okay, so this is
all... You know me and horror, I want nothing to do with it.
So it's
just let me play my flute and send it to hell. That's all I want to do. That's all I want to do.
You've lived a good life fighting for your colony. Off to hell.
Let me get the door for you.
So, the premise is a kid living in a small town. I think it's like set in the late 70s, early 80s.
That's the thing that gets me the most, too. Because I've seen The Ring. Fuck that noise. I don't need a dead little girl murdering me.
No, no, no. It's nowhere near like the same sort of like okay. level as Ring. So,
like dead kids freaked the fuck out of me.
late 70s, early 80s, somewhere within that like time period that Generation X really nostalgizes now. The main character kid gets kidnapped by Ethan Hawke, thrown in a basement, and there's a phone that's not connected to anything, but like the souls of previous victims are able to call him on the phone and like try to help him think of ways to escape.
That's so, kind of interesting, though.
Yeah, it's more like Silence of the Lamb than something like The Ring. So not really so much like a horror movie, like they're gonna hit you with jump scares or anything. Like there are some times where like there's some bloody images, but nothing to the point where like it's not like a gore fest. It's not like a gorgasm or like torture porn or anything like that. But you know, there's some creepy moments. There's some tense moments to it, that's for sure. But this kid is trying to escape a violent fate that other kids have fallen before him. So, you know, there's some tension there, but it's like the ghosts aren't the antagonist. The ghosts are there to help him. They're still a little creepy because they're dead kids.
Yeah.
But they're not, it's not the ghosts who are trying to kill him. It's Ethan Hawke wearing a mask, who's a creepy, the big old creep in the movie.
Ethan Hawke is so weird, especially like, the last thing I saw Ethan Hawke in was the fucking Northman, and that was just weird. I was like, he didn't need to do that at all. Like, that was...
Yeah, because he wasn't in that movie for very long.
Like, 5 minutes.
But yeah,
like,
that was a trip, that movie. Man.
Oh, God. I did not like that movie. I don't know why Ryan likes it. I do not.
I thought it was pretty good.
I mean, I'd rather rewatch Moonfall.
Well, Moonfall is a joy, though.
Moonfall is a joy. See, there's no, according to you, there's no place for the Gray Man, but the Moonfall's got a spot.
The Gray Man, I'm not fine with the Gray Man existing.
No, you hate it. I know you do. I can see it in your eyes.
I don't want to yuck your yum. It's fine.
Put the flute down, John.
It's allowed. The Gray Man is allowed to exist. Like, I don't, like, begrudge the existence of anything, because now, like, we live in a world where like more than, you know, 40 movies can be made in a year. There's all like these different production studios and distribution apparatuses where like anything can be made.
There's
at this
place
point
for it.
Yeah. There's a place for anything.
And then now and then things like Everything Everywhere slips in.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, wow, how did I not live with this?
Right.
This is amazing. God, I love that movie. That movie's so good.
Sure, good. Jeremy and Allie end up liking it.
They really liked it. They're like, good. Wes, that was awesome. Really? Good job. That was a great way to wrap this trip up. I'm like, good.
Because I don't think I made it to the end when you guys were watching it. I think I had to go to work the next day or something.
Yeah, you went to bed early. You just did
maybe
that
was
some
a,
of it.
Maybe that was the day where I had to go to work early. Anyway, okay. Doesn't matter.
That was good.
Next up, we're going to do a retro show.
Yeah. Ryan's going to talk about music.
Mm-hmm.
If he can get out of jail.
I'm sure, yeah. He'll get out.
Is he Cody yet for bail?
No. He knows I'm not going to give him money.
Yeah, I just sent it straight to voicemail.
But he'll call Busey. He gets more than one phone call.
He does.
As we've all learned today. And then we'll wrap it up at the end of the month with the official show. I'm just trying to think offhand of new releases. Oh, we'll be able to talk about games like Blossom Tales 2. There's
other games right now.
Yeah, there's games besides Xenoblade. I can't think of what they are. I don't remember anything before Xenoblade came out.
The only thing I know is Scarlet Violet at the end of the year. That's all I got right now in my head.
There was that Breath of the Wild game that came out. That was pretty good, too.
What?
That Zelda game? Breath of the Wild?
I'm talking about games coming out this year.
Oh, yeah. There's a Breath of the Wild game coming out next year, allegedly.
Yeah, supposedly. Unless it's going to follow its predecessor and be delayed 12 times.
Breath of the Wild originally was delayed. I think it was delayed twice.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly. Breath of the Wild 2. It feels like it's been delayed a lot, but the only release date they ever gave for it was 2022.
Yeah, so it's been delayed one time.
So it's been delayed one time, so there might be another one coming.
And it's probably just delayed just to not pair it up with Scarlet Violet.
Maybe. Yeah, that's
probably why.
Yeah, that's kind of my conspiracy theory on that one, too. Like, I'm sure they could use the extra time to work on the game, but I think they looked at their schedule for this year and was like, yeah, we're good. Let's move that to 23, take our time with it, and actually have something for that year.
Yeah.
And then we'll start it up again in September with the Pokemon show.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the end. Till next time.
So long.